This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
This evening we have many, many fascinating things to present. And we have two sheets tonight. Two sheets. Because not only are we learning this week, are we going to be learning Parshas Shemois, we're also beginning Sefer Shemois, the second book of the Chumash. So the first thing we want to discuss is what makes Sefer Shemois, Sefer Shemois? What is the general theme of the Sefer that makes this a separate book of the Chumash? We know there are five books in the Torah, Bereishis, Shemois, Vayikra, Bamidbar, and Devarim. So there has to be something distinctive, something that makes these 10 parashios or so a separate Sefer. There's something thematic. Okay? Well, what makes Sefer Bereishis, Sefer Bereishis? Is there one common theme about Sefer Bereishis? You know, at first glance, it seems not. Because the Ramban has coined Sefer Bereishis, Sefer HaYetzirah, the book of creation. But if we think to ourselves, is that really the proper terminology for the Sefer Bereishis? Very nice. The first parasha talks about the creation of the world. But after that, you have the flood, you have the life of Noah, you have Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. 95% of the Sefer doesn't talk about the creation of the world. So why is Sefer Bereishis termed Sefer HaYetzirah, the book of creation? So the Ramban tells us in his introduction to Sefer Shemois that really we could say that the entire Sefer is the book of creation. The whole book of Bereishis is the book of creation. How? Because, first of all, we have the creation of the world. Okay, that's obvious. But then, and we mentioned this during Shalashudas a number of times, that the lifetime of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov was the pre-enactment, the paradigm, the symbolic representation of the history of Klal Yisrael. Their life created Klal Yisrael's history. How? The rule is, Maaseh Avos Siman Labanim. Whatever happened to our forefathers will happen to their descendants. So for instance, Abraham Avinu, he goes down to Mitzrayim, right? Why does he go down to Mitzrayim? Because of hunger, remember? What happened? Sarah was taken away. Eventually he leaves with great wealth. That created the fact that Klal Yisrael would go down to Egypt because of hunger. All the women would be saved with the threat made against the men. But eventually we leave with great wealth. What's the great wealth? We left with money. We took all of their booty. All of their booty, right? Plus, but the real great wealth was the Torah. The real great wealth was the Torah. So that's just one illustration how the lifetime of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov created the history of Klal Yisrael. So we could say safely that Sefer Bereishis is Sefer HaYetzirah, the book of creation, because it talks about the creation of the world and the creation of the history of Klal Yisrael. Sefer Shemois, that the Ramban says is redemption. Sefer HaGeulah, the book of redemption. Why? Because the Jewish people are redeemed. But even more than that, if Sefer Bereishis is the book where our history is being created, Sefer Shemos is where, right? Sefer Bereishis, the history was pre-enacted. Sefer Shemos, it's actually enacted. It's carried through. Meaning, Sefer Bereishis is Maaseh Avos. Sefer Shemos is the Siman Labanim. Is it coming to fruition? Okay. Says Ramban, what general theme is there in the whole Sefer Shemos? Geula. What does Geula mean? Redemption. We're redeemed. Fine. So if we were writing the Sefer, what would we do? We would talk about the Jews going down to Egypt and coming out. But so the Sefer should end with Parshas B'Shalach, once the Jews have left Egypt. What do we need to know? That they came to Midbar Sinai, and they got the Torah, and they built the Mishkan, and so forth. What does that have to do with Geula? What does it have to do with redemption? Says the Ramban, incredible thing. What does the word Geula mean? What does redemption mean? It means being restored to the state that the Jewish people were once at. Okay? Now, what state were we once at? The state of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So let's describe what level Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were at. Right? Remember, we learned about the tent of Sarah Imenu. What were the three distinctive features of the tent of Sarah Imenu? Anan Kashur al Ahala. The divine presence of Hashem rested on her tent. Okay, number two, she baked the challah, Erev Shabbos, It stayed fresh through the whole week. Okay? And number three, she lit the Shabbos candles, it stayed lit. Right? That represented the fact, the special Shekhinah that dwelled on the tent of Abraham, and we know that when Sarah passed away and Rivka came, it came back. So that was the state of the Avos. But when they went down to Mitzrayim, and they lost that special connection to Hashem, and even because whatever, that we didn't share that closeness to Hashem Shekhinah.
How do you know that?
We don't see it. We don't find it. We don't find
where
it.
Where do you find it that it did, all these things?
Where? Chazal tell us that the Medrash says that when Rivka came, it says that that Yitzchak was consoled after his mother, meaning he was happy now that he had this wife, Rivka. Yeah. Rivka brought back whatever Sarah used to bring. So from there we learn out. Okay, but the Klal Yisrael lost that. When did it return? When they built the Mishkan. What happened when they built the Mishkan? The Anani HaKavod rested on the Mishkan. That means the Madrega that Sarah achieved in her tent, Klal Yisrael achieved on a national level. Right? The Lechem HaPanim stayed fresh from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos. The Menorah and the Beis HaMikdash was constantly lit. So that means whatever Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were able to achieve on their own, that was lost until when? Until the Jewish people built the Mishkan. Okay? So Sefer Shemos is a Sefer which sort of restores the level of Klal Yisrael had before they went down to Mitzrayim. Okay. I'll just bring out another point. The Medrash says that...
Wait, so how do you answer? Why do we need the second half?
Because the second half brought back... First of all, Klal Yisrael was not fully redeemed until they got the Torah and they built the Mishkan and the Shekhinah rested in the Ayal Ma'id. Okay? Now, another interesting facet, the Medrash tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu set up the Mishkan, it says, Vayehi b'yoyim kalois Moshe sa Mishkan, and it was on the day Moshe finished the Mishkan. Okay, we read that on the first day of Chanukah. Vayehi. So the Medrash wants to know, why does it say the word Vayehi? The Medrash says, Vayehi means something that once existed, was lost, and then came back. What was lost that came back with the Mishkan? Says the Medrash, that before Adam HaRishon sinned, remember when Adam HaRishon, it says, Vayishma es kol Hashem mishalech bagan. He heard God's voice traveling through the garden. The Medrash says, we see from here, God, His Shekhinah was in this world. God was betachtoinim. As the Sefer HaTanya says, the goal of mankind is to bring down the Shekhinah to the tachtoinim. That was for a special
guest.
But, don't tell anyone I said that.
It's okay, Rabbi.
But it was lost. When Adam Rishon sinned, the Shekhinah left. And it was not restored until the Shekhinah came down on the Mishkan. So in other words, not only is Sefer Shemos restoring the level of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, it was restoring the level of the world before Adam HaRishon sinned. Before Adam sinned, Hashem, He was around, you know, He was prevalent, He was matzoi, He was in this world. When he sinned, Hashem was chased out until the Shekhinah came back with the building of the Mishkan. So in other words, say what is Sefer Shemos? A restoration of Bereshis. Bringing back Bereshis. Okay. Now I'm going to tell you something very interesting. We know the Gedolim of the last 500 years or so are called the Achronim. From about the year 1500 to, let's say, from 800 to 1500, it was the Rishonim. Before that period, Ga'inim, the Ga'inim. Who are some of the Ga'inim?
Vilna Gaon.
Vilna Gaon is, okay.
He was the biggest Gaon.
But he was from the Achronim.
Well, Vilna Gaon, if he was not in the Ga'inim.
Okay.
Yeah.
What? You have Rav Sadya Gaon, Rav Shrira Gaon, Rav Achai Gaon, Rav Hai Gaon, and one of the Gaonim was the Bahag, the Baal Hilchos Gedolos. Okay? And he says something which seems very simple, but obviously is not simple. There are many Gaonim. Listen to what he says. He terms the five books of Moses, he gives them new names. Bereshis, Sefer Bereshis. That he sticks to the simple. Shemois, Sefer Hasheni, the second book. Chumash Hasheni, Chumash Hasheni. Okay, so you say, you know, what's the big Gaonis calling it Chumash Hasheni? You know, everybody knows it's the second book. What does he mean, Chumash Hasheni? So you would expect, what does he call Vayikra?
A fifth.
No. Sefer Kohanim, the book of the priests. That makes sense. It's all about the laws of the Kohanim and the Beis HaMikdash and so forth. Bamidbar, Sefer HaPekudim, the book of counting numbers. Devarim, Mishnah Torah, the review of the whole Torah. So it sounds like he's trying to come up with a term to describe each one of the Svarim. Bereishis, fine, creation, the beginning. Vayikra, Sefer Kohanim. Bamidbar, Chumash HaPekudim. I skipped one. Devarim, Mishnah Torah. And he came up with this Goinistika term for Shemois. Chumash HaSheni, mamish, brilliant. Brilliant, right? Chumash HaSheni. What's he trying to tell me by saying it's Chumash HaSheni? What's he adding? What deep thing is he trying to tell me? So the Netziv writes in his Hakdama to Sefer Shemais.
What does he say?
Listen. The fact that the Bahag calls Sefer Shemos Chumash HaSheni, obviously he's trying to teach me, you know what? That Sefer Shemais is Bereishis Part 2. Okay? It's almost not a separate Sefer. It's Chelek Sheni of Sefer Bereishis. The second part of creation. How is Sefer Shemais the second part of creation? Very simple. If you look when Hashem created the world, He created, what did He create on the first day? Heaven and the earth. And it says at the end of the day one, Vayi Erev, Vayi Voiker, Yoim, Rishayin. At the end of the second day, He created the heavens, Vayi Erev, Vayi Voiker, Yoim, Sheni. On the third day, He gathered the water, Vayi Erev, Vayi Voiker, Yoim, Shlishi. Fourth day, He created the luminaries, the fifth day, and so forth. Yoim Chamishi, Yoim Shlishi. When it comes to the sixth day, it doesn't say Vayera Vayvoker Yom Shishi. What does it say?
Yom HaShishi.
Yom HaShishi. The sixth day. Why? Why? It doesn't say Yom HaRishon, Yom HaSheni, Yom HaShlishi. But the sixth day says Yom HaShishi. Says Rashi, it's not referring to the sixth day of creation. It's referring to the sixth day of Sivan. What happened on the sixth day of Sivan? Shavuos. What happened on Shavuos? Torah was given. Hashem's saying like this, I'm creating the world, very nice, very nice. But everything is dependent on Yom HaShishi, the day the Torah was given. Hashem says, He made a condition, He made a stipulation of the world. If the Jews accept the Torah, beautiful. V'yam lav, achzer es ha'olam latoyu v'avayu, I will revert the world back to emptiness. In other words, the world, you know, it's like you make a deal with someone, but on condition you meet certain requirements. Hashem created the world on condition what? That the Jews accept the Torah. So in other words, after Sefer Bereishis and God created the world and He created the history of the Jewish people, was the world created yet?
No.
Not fully. Until when?
Until the Jews accepted
it. Until the Torah was given. So that's the pshat, why the Bahag calls Chumash Shemais, Chumash Sheni. It's part two of creation. Because if the Jews do not accept the Torah, there is no creation. Creation would fall apart.
Rabbi.
Creation would disintegrate.
Rabbi.
So therefore, just to make clear, the Bahag terms the second book, the book of Shemos, Chumash Sheni, to teach you it's the second part of creation. Okay? And creation, in fact, we mentioned that we had a question. Esav sells the Bechira to Yaakov. Now, let's say I'm a Bechar. Could I sell my birthright to my younger brother?
Sell the beans.
No, you can't sell it. You know why?
Sold.
You know why you can't sell the Bechara? Yeah. Because what are you buying? You're buying the double share of the inheritance. But you didn't get it yet. So you can't be makne future rights. It's called in adam makne davar shaloi bala oilam. You can't be makne something that has not come to the world yet. So how could Yaakov buy from Esau the Bechira? So if you look in the Ketzayis HaChoshen, he brings down from one of the Rishonim, the Rivash, that before the Torah was given, you're allowed to be makne, something that's not in the world. You're allowed to transact. You can make a transaction on something that's not in the world. Why? Why? Why should that be? What's the reason why? Let's say I say like this to you. You know, in 10 days from now, you see my apple tree? There are no apples yet, because it's not springtime. I want to sell to you the apples that grow on my tree in the spring. Can I sell it to you?
Sure.
You give me $100 and I give you all my apples.
Is it a discount?
Is it a valid halachic transaction?
It's not a discount.
No. No. You cannot halachically transfer it because it's not here. You can't be makne something halachically that's not in the world.
What about sharecroppers?
You could, so you know what you could do? you could sell the tree for the fruit.
Or the land
for the produce. In other words, you could sell the keren for the peros. But just for the peros alone, if the sale is not, if you're not transacting something that's here now, if you sell somebody the tree, so you could sell somebody the part of the tree that produces the fruit. In other words, a share in the tree that produces the fruit. But just to transact the fruit, it's ineffective. So how could Yaakov sell the Bechora to Esav? Because before the Torah was given, you can transact something that's not in the world.
What changed?
Why?
Yeah, the Torah was there. Why can we do it?
1 second.
Some of the literature that I've seen basically says that on the first day it created the light, but he didn't create the illuminaries till later in the week, and that the light was actually the Torah.
Yeah, turn on the light.
Okay. That's a subject in and of itself. What does it mean? There was day and night if God hadn't created the sun and the moon yet. So, whether the primordial light, is, right? Whatever that means, that's a separate subject. But actually, the Torah was created many 900 and so generations before the world was created. There was a Torah. Okay? Avraham Avinu was generation number 20. The Torah was given generation 26. That was the 1,000th generation from when the Torah was around. The Torah was given in generation 1,000. Davar tziva la'elef dar, we say in davening. Torah was commanded in generation 1,000. I think 964 generations before the world was created, there was a Torah. Fine. So how was Yaakov able to transact to Esav the birthright if before the Torah was given? The answer is, before the Torah was given, everything was not in the world. Nothing was in the world. Because if the Torah is not accepted, the world would disintegrate. So in order, let's say I want to buy a piece of land from you. That's also something that's not in the world because it's not here yet. Because if the Jews don't accept the Torah, the land won't exist. In order to allow any transactions, we had to allow transactions on something that's not in the world. Otherwise, all transactions would have been invalid. Because until the Torah is given, the world is not here. So the world has no permanence. The world could, you know, immediately disintegrate. Fine.
So what happened to Maariv HaMachpelah, the transaction of that?
Because before the Torah was given, you could transact something that's not in the world yet.
Okay.
Before the Torah was given, you can... Okay. So in other words, why is Sefer Shemos Chelek Sheni? Because it's the second, it's creation part two. First, God created the world, but without the Torah of Sefer Shemos, the world would not exist anymore. Fine. Just quickly, because I don't want to lose that on sheet number two over here, just to throw out and suggest another idea why Sefer Shemos is Chelek Chumash Sheni. Okay? The second part of creation. How many exiles, how many galusim have we been in? All together?
Three.
Four.
Rome?
Okay.
No, it's the last one.
Babel? Babel?
Rome?
Madai? Persia? Yavan, Greek? And Edom, Rome, that's what we're in today. These are the four galusim. And they're alluded to in the beginning of the Torah. It says, what does it say? V'ha'aretz hosa soyhu. Sayhu is Babel. Vayhu is Madai. Choshech, Yavan. That's why Chanukah, light, is by Choshech. Choshech. And Alpnei Sahom is Edom. Because Tahom is like the deep abyss. Like this Galus is almost endless. Okay? Fine. There are four Galusim. We always talk about throughout all our literature, Midrashim, Gemaras, there are four galusim. What happened to the most obvious one? Which is the most obvious one? Mitzrayim. What happened to Mitzrayim? Well, the 430 years or the 210 years in Egypt, that was, you know, nothing. That was a pretty intense galus. Says the Arizal that galus Mitzrayim was the father of all four galusim. It included in all of them. It was the pre-enactment, so to speak, the Maasei Avos Siman Labanim of all four Galusim. That's why in the beginning of the Parsha, it says, look in the beginning of this week's Parsha, page 292. Ve'ela Shemos B'nei Yisrael Ha-Ba'im. Ba'im stands for Bavel, Edom, Yavan, Madai. Okay? The beginning of Golas Mitzrayim, we already have, the Arizal says, Ha-Ba'im, we have the hint, we have the allusion to all four Golusim, all four exiles. Very interestingly, So Sefer Shemos is also a book of creation, created our various Golusim that we went through. But also, Yitzias Mitzrayim was a Masei Avos Siman Labanim for the Geula Ho'asida, the Geula Achrona. How do you know that? There's a pasuk in Micha. Everyone should know this pasuk. Look at number 8. The Navi Micha tells us, Ki Meitzizcha Me'eretz Mitzrayim Arenu Nifla'ois. Look at number 8. There's a beautiful pasuk. Like the days that you went out of Egypt, I will show you miracles in the future. In other words, all of the miracles of Yitzias Mitzrayim were a portend. It was a symbolic pre-enactment of the Gula HaAchrona. So Sefer Shemais, we could consider a book of creation in its own right. It's creating the final chapter of our history. As we're leaving Mitzrayim, we're leaving with great wealth, with great honor, receiving the highest spiritual levels. This represents the final destiny of the Jewish people. Creating the final destiny. Like the pasuk says, Ki meitzeischa me'eretz Mitzrayim, arenu neflais. As we left Egypt, God will likewise show us miracles in the future. All the miracles of Mitzrayim are the pre-enactment of the miracles that will happen to us by the Gula HaChrona. In fact, we know the Gemara tells us, the same way we were redeemed in Chodesh Nisan, B'Nisan Nigalu, V'Nisan Asidin Ligal. Right? And just we'll end off this part with one more thing. The Shlach HaKadosh tells us that we know Tisha B'Av is called a Moed. In Sefer Eicha, it's called Kara Alayma. It's called a Yom Tov. Why? Because eventually, the Beis HaMikdash will, Mashiach will come. We have a tradition. On Tisha was born. Mashiach was born on Tisha B'Av, or will be born on Tisha B'Av. Eventually, be a Yom Tov. The same night of the year the Jewish people left Egypt is the same night that Tisha B'Av falls out every single year. You want to know what night Tisha B'Av is? Whatever night the night of the Seder is, that's the night of Tisha B'Av. Every year.
Whoa.
At Bash, the first night of Pesach, is the night of Tisha B'Av. Aleph, Tav. Aleph is the first night of Pesach, Tav is Tisha B'Av. Okay? Why? Because Yitzias Mitzrayim is the pre-enactment of the Gula HaChrona. Whatever happened in Mitzrayim is going to bring about what happens in the Gula HaChrona, the final redemption. And therefore, the night of Yitzias Mitzrayim is the same night as Tisha B'Av, which is eventually the time. It is a Yantav. We don't say Tachlan on
Tisha B'Av.
Now it has a great aspect of sadness, but there is an aspect of happiness also. On Tisha B'Av, we don't say Tachnun because of the fact that it's a Moed. But the fact that the night of the Seder is also the night of Tisha B'Av, because the night of the Seder is a pre-enactment of the Gula HaChrona, like the Pasuk says, Ki Meitzeischa Me'eretz Mitzrayim Arenu Neflois. And in this sense, Sefer Shemais is part two of the Book of Creation. Because Sefer Bereishis is the creation of the world and the history until now, Sefer Shemais is the creation of the final chapter of our history.
When Mashiach comes, is Hashem going to split the sea?
Greater miracles. The Navi says that the miracles of Yitzias Mitzrayim will pale in comparison to the miracles of Gula HaChrona. One of the things we know is that the Har HaZeisim will split in half. That's one of the things we know. Okay, now we move on a little bit.
All Jews are going to be able to see it like firsthand?
Hopefully.
Yeah, wow, that's something to look forward to.
Okay, now we move on to the second sheet. By the way, you know, they say, what's the first thing the Jews are going to do when Mashiach comes? Take out the camera, right? Okay.
They don't take it out, it's there.
Okay, let's move on a little bit. So in this week's parasha, by the way, Paro tells the midwives, when you see a Jewish baby being born, kill it, kill it. Now, what do the midwives say? The midwives say, we can't. The Jewish women, they're like animals. They don't need midwives. They just give birth. They know what to do. You know, they know the women, these Jewish baba, they know what to do. The baby just comes out. What kind of response was that? Who cares? Paro tells the women, kill them. So they came out. So kill them after they come out. You know, what was their response? Because by the time we get there, the baby's already born. So kill them.
No, we don't have any work. We're not there. They don't need us.
Well, when they come in, when the nurse comes, when the baby is taken to the nursery, so kill them then.
No, they don't need the nurse. They're saying we don't work it. We're not working.
No. They're saying we get there too late. So the pshat is like this. Paro is the king of Egypt. He's not going to make a decree for women to murder babies. Obviously not. The nation's not going to go for it. A king has to run the country with some semblance of rule or order.
Politically correct.
So what is he doing? Abortion. He said, you abort the babies before they're born. You know, look inside, see what the gender is going to be, and abort the babies. Abort them. But they say we can't, because by the time we get there, the baby's already born. And obviously a cold-blooded murder is not going to work in your kingdom. That was the back and forth between Yocheved and Miriam and Paro. What reward did Hashem give Yocheved and Miriam? Take a look in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, page 294. This is a beautiful Gaonistic Pshat. Chaf Aleph. Okay, we're going to do some brisker Torah now.
It's good.
Chaf Aleph. Vayehi, and it was Kiyaru HaMeyaldois HaSolekim, when the midwives feared God, Vayas Lohem Batim, God made houses for them. What does that mean, he made houses? Says Rashi, three lines from the bottom of the second column, he gave them the following reward. He said, Bate Kehuna, Levia Umalchus. The priests will come from you, the Leviim will come from you. Right? We have Kohanim here. We have Leviim. You're a Levi, right? And kings, not yet. Hopefully one day. What? Malchus based David. Now so let's think for a second. Kohanim and Leviim, who'd they come from? Levi, from Yocheved. Yocheved Moshe. How about kings?
From Yehuda. Benjamin Yehuda.
Fine. We're Yocheved and Miriam. What kings? Miriam married Kalev. Kalev ben Yefuneh fathered the dynasty of Malchus Beis Yehuda. Okay? So listen to this. This is beautiful. Yeah? Why did Hashem reward Yocheved and Miriam that they would be the progenitors of Tehuna, Leviah, and Malchus? Why that reward? Why not give them, I don't know what, you know, put them on the cover of Forbes 500, I don't know. Give them why that reward? Because what did Paro want them to do? Kill the males. What would have happened to the women? Who would they marry?
Goyim.
Is that so terrible? No, the kids will be Jayin. Well, were they going to destroy, did Paro want to destroy Klal Yisrael? No. He only wanted to destroy those aspects of Judaism that are passed down through the father. What are they? Kahuna, Leviah, Malchus. Kohanim goes after the father. Leviim, only the father. Malchus, your father has to be from Malchus based David. So what Paro wanted to eradicate was the aspects of lineage that go after the father. As a reward for them not doing that, they were rewarded that Kohanim, Leviim, and kings came from them. Because they restored the patrilineal descent of the Jewish people.
Why did he want to do that?
He wanted to marry the women.
No.
Why did he want to be?
Why did he only want to destroy the Kohen lady?
Yeah.
I have one also expression.
Yeah.
The Brit Milah, no? The Egyptian also used to do the same thing. So that's the only mitzvah that Jew did back then. Only the Brit Milah.
So that explains why what?
It's starting the only mitzvah that they used to do.
So they stopped, and they were rewarded that Kohanim, Leviim, and Malchus?
I mean,
they wanted to stop the mitzvah for the men. Interesting. Okay, another interesting piece. Okay, this is also a lesson in social work. You ready for this one? Here, Moshe Rabbeinu grows up, turn to page 298. Okay, Shlishi. Vayihi bayamim ahim. It was in those days. Vayigdal Moshe grew up. Vayitze Yalechav, he goes out to his brothers. Vayar b'sivlosam, he sees their burden. Vayar ish Mitzri, make ish Ivri Meyachav, he sees an Egyptian whacking his friend, smiting his friend. Vayifen ko v'cho, he turns this way, he turns that way. Vayar ki einish, he sees no one's looking. Vayaches ha-mitzri, he smacks the mitzri. Moshe hits the mitzri. Vayitmineo b'chol, he kills him, he buries him in the sand. By the way, I want to hear an explanation. What does it mean he turned this way and that way? Moshe Rabbeinu was a little, so to speak, trying to figure himself out. Here Moshe Rabbeinu leaves his palace for the first time. He knew his father was Amram, his mother was Yocheved. They didn't raise him. He was raised in the house of Paro. Moshe Rabbeinu sees an Egyptian hitting a Jew. Moshe Rabbeinu says, what am I? Who am I? Am I a Yid or am I a Mitzri? Vayifen Koi, he turns one way, he sees himself as a Yid. Vayifen Cho, he turns the other way, he sees himself as an Egyptian. Vayar Ki Enish, he says, that's no way to be a man. That's no way to be a man. To be wishy-washy, to be jumping on both sides. And he said, I have to take a stance. Vayaches HaMitzri, he smites the Mitzri. That he goes out to his brothers, he had to determine, now that he's leaving his palace, what am I? Vayifen Ko V'cho, he turns both ways. Vayar Ki Enish. There's no. If you're a man, you can't straddle both sides of the fence. You have to determine who are you. Vayaches hamitzi. In any event, but that's not what Rashi says. That's what we call a homiletic.
So who was he?
Well, he was a Yid. But look what Rashi says. What does it mean he saw nobody was there? What does it mean vayar ki enish? What does it mean vayar ki enish? He saw there was no man. Says Rashi. Take a look at Rashi. She'ein ish asid. He saw there would be no worthy descendant to come out of this Egyptian. No one would ever convert from this Egyptian guy. Let me ask you a question. Yeah, he looked in Ruach HaKodesh and he saw there was nobody worthy coming out of this guy, so he killed him. Let me ask you a question. Let's say in the time when there was a Jewish court system and they warned the guy, don't desecrate Shabbos. And the guy said, I'm doing it anyway. What would happen to him? They kill him. They stone him. What if, you know, one of the tzaddikim sees that he's going to have a grandchild who's going to be a big tzaddik? What do they do to him? They stone him. Doesn't matter what's going to come out of this guy. That's not our business. When somebody is worthy of the death penalty, that's not our prerogative to start playing God. Who is worthy to come out?
If nothing's coming out of him, you stone him harder.
No. So what does it mean? Why was Moshe Rabbeinu... If Moshe Rabbeinu felt that this individual is worthy of death, what's he looking to see whether somebody worthy was going to come out of him or not? If you're Chayiv Misa, you're Chayiv Misa. Now, why was this Mitzri Chayiv Misa? Why was he liable to the death penalty? The Rambam says, if a guy hits a Yid, even if he doesn't wound him, he's liable to the death penalty. Okay? But we don't kill him. What does that mean, we don't kill him? That means he's liable to the death penalty through the hands of heaven. But the courts down here will not kill him. He's chayiv misa bidei shamayim. Okay? How is Moshe Rabbeinu killing this Mitzri? How did he kill him? He took out a pistol and he shot him? He said God's name, the ineffable name, because we see later when he meets up with Dasan Ba'aviram, they said, Moshe, get out of here. Ha'lehargeni ato oimerik? You're going to kill me with words like you killed that Mitzri? So how is Moshe killing this guy? With God's name. What kind of misa is that? That's Misa Bidei Shamayim. That's not a Bezdin. That's Hashem killing him. When Hashem takes away somebody's life, Hashem looks to see who is going to come out of this person. And if this person's going to have a worthy descendant, Hashem will refrain. So therefore, since Moshe Rabbeinu was not killing him as a judicial
human
judge, but rather as Misa Bidei Shamayim. And when it comes to Misa Bidei Shamayim, we have to look to see what is the outcome. Moshe Rabbeinu has to see, is anybody going to come out of this guy? Because he's not killing him as a dayan. It's Misa Bidei Shamayim. It's Misa Bidei Shamayim. Okay? Says Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin. Right? Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin says, if you remember when Klal Yisrael... Yeah, Rabbi Shua Leib. He says when the Klal Yisrael was traveling through the lands of Ammon, Moab, Midian, so what did we do to the Midianim? They were liable to the death penalty because of all the harm they inflicted upon us. They caused us to serve idols. They caused us to commit lewd acts. And they were liable to the death penalty. What about Moab? Gemara says we didn't kill Moab. Why? Because out of Moab would come Rus and Naama. Who cares? Who cares? Who cares who's coming out of them? If it's a war of a mitzvah, you got to do what you got to do. You got to wipe them out. The answer is because the Torah says this is Nikmas Hashem. This is God's vengeance. This is not a regular warfare. This is the warfare of God. When God exacts vengeance, it has to be calculated.
Long term.
It has to be calculated. And therefore, because Rus and Nama were going to come out of them, they were spared. They were spared. So again, when the courts down here, when human beings have to make a decision and punish someone, they don't take into account the future, that they don't play God. But when we're using some type of supernatural system, when Moshe Rabbeinu is using the Shema Mefarash, he has to figure out exactly what are the repercussions. Is anyone going to come out of this individual? No? Then he could use it. Otherwise...
In the case of Rus and Nama, who was it that was like the Moshe Rabbeinu?
The Kali Yisrael.
They were in a van?
No, but Hashem caused them to cast upon their enemy a unnatural fear.
No, but in order to see down the line, you have to have a prophecy. So
Hashem, we don't know exactly
Moshe
the prophecy. Hashem told Moshe.
But no, but Rus and Nama, Moshe was there.
No, they didn't kill Moab because of the future. Rus and Nama.
The next generation.
Right? And many, right. Okay. Here, listen to this. Moshe Rabbeinu, let's look at the next pasuk. Pasuk Yud Gimel, okay? Vayetze vayom hasheni, he goes out on day two. Vihinei shnei anoshim ivrim nitzim. He sees two Jews fighting. By the way, who are these men? Says Rashi, who are they? Dasan and Aviram, right? Whenever we say anoshim in a bad context, it's the two, you always have the two guys, you know, they always, whenever something bad is happening, you always have the Dasan and the Aviram. You know, they rear up on all occasions. Vayomer l'Rasha, Moshe says to the Rasha, Lama sakriyecha, why are you hitting your friend? Who is the Rasha? Dasan. And he says to Dasan, what are you doing hitting your friend? Okay. Now let's zoom a few decades later. Dasan and Aviram, do they like Moshe Rabbeinu?
No.
Right? In fact, they were the...
That's what he killed them.
They were the main proponents of... Korach. Korach, right?
Didn't he kill him?
No.
He hurt his hand.
That was the Mitzri. This is episode 2.
Wow.
Let me ask you a question. Why does Moshe...
Yeah, yeah.
He rebukes Dasan. He rebukes Dasan, yeah? So I understand why Dasan hates Moshe. But Aviram should love Moshe. Here you have two guys getting into a fight, right? They're fighting. Dasan picks up his hand. He's about to slap the guy next to you, right? Don't hit the Vera. He's my friend, right? But imagine he's about to attack, and I say, see, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Right? So, okay, I understand. You're not going to like me anymore. But the Vera, he's going to love me. I'm saving his life. I'm saving his life. But yet we find later on in history, not only does Dasan hate Moshe Rabbeinu, Aviram, he hates him just as much. Why is that? Says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Brilliant insight. Dasan and Aviram are brothers. If you look in Parshas Pinchas, it says Eliyav had Dasan, Aviram, Nemuel, and so forth. When you meddle into family politics and you try to help out one side, eventually they'll make up and they'll both hate you. Because family, even if they're on bad terms now, the nature is, they'll go to the Hanukkah party together, and they'll schmooze, you know, they'll sit back, they'll drink, they'll eat, and they'll forget about it. But then one of them's going to say, that guy, that rabbi, you know, remember when he rebuked me? And, you know, what's his business? Who does he think he is? And the other brother's going to agree, even though he was trying to help out. That's the way it is. Be careful when you meddle into a family, because you think you're helping one side, eventually they'll make up, and they'll both be against you. Yeah. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. If you look, it's in number 6. I'm sorry, we're not reading it inside. But, okay.
That's like domestic violence.
What?
Police don't want to get involved if they can. It's always a bad outcome. No matter what.
That was a great analogy. No, it was right.
Okay, we're going to end with the following. Okay. We're going to end with the following. Ready for this, Oren?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Pen's ready.
Okay. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the burning bush, right? He comes to the burning bush. What does God say? He says, Sha'alt. First he says, Al tikrav halom. Don't approach here. What do you think? you doing standing by my burning bush? Move back. Step back. Al tikrav. What's the word? Halom, right, you said? Al tikrav halom. Then he says, take off your shoes. Remember, Parshas Vayetze, we learned taking off your shoes, that the body is like the shoe of the neshama, right? Because the neshama is the bottom portion of the neshama in our body is the bottom portion of the neshama. The body to the neshama is like the shoe to the body. Fine. So God says, move away. Don't approach here. Take off your shoes. You're standing on holy ground. Says the Gemara in Zvachim, we learn from here, at this point, Moshe Rabbeinu was asking to be the king of Klal Yisrael. He wanted Malchus to come from him. Probably because he already knew that his mother was promised Malchus. You know, we learned earlier, the reward of Yocheved and Miriam was Kuhuna, Leviyah. Moshe Rabbeinu figured, I have the Kuhuna and the Leviyah. Moshe lost the Kuhuna, by the way. I want Malchus also. Where do we see he wanted Malchus? Because Hashem says, Al Tikrav Halom. And whenever we refer to the majesty of the king in Tanakh, it's called Halom. We find in Sefer Shmuel, where the king said, who am I that you have brought me ad halom, until here. Halom refers to a special level. And we find when Boaz was talking to Rus, he said, he uses the word halom to allude that Rus, kings are going to come from you. Hashem says to Moshe, al tikrav halom, don't come here. Meaning, you're not going to be a king. You're not going to be a king. But that's it. That's all we see. That Moshe was asking to be a king from the word halom. Is there anything else in this incident that gives us sort of a remez to this idea that Moshe Rabbeinu was asking to be the king? So listen to Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin. Go'inus. Listen to what he says. Gemara tells us in Chulin, until what age are you called a yeled, a child? When do you move out of being a yeled? So listen to what the Gemara says. Gemara doesn't give an age, it gives a simen. So long as you could stand on one leg and take off your shoe and put on your shoe, you're a yeled. You ever see kids, you know, they're very flexible, they're balanced. Yeah, but try taking off your shoe, standing on one leg, you know?
You mean if you're standing on one leg, you have to take off the shoe that you're standing on. That's hard.
No, try standing on one leg, taking off the shoe. It's a very difficult task. Says the Gemara, you could do that, you're a yeled. After that, you can't. Says the Gemara in Chulin, Rabbi Hanina was able to take off his shoe standing on one foot at age 80. Says Rabbi Hanina, you know why I was able to do that? It was the hot water and the wine and the oil that my mother moisturized me when I was a child that gives me the kayak, the strength to be able to do this at age 80. So he's crediting his mother's care to his extraordinary strength at age 80. What do we see from here? Says Rabbi Shlomo Diskin. That ordinarily an 80-year-old person cannot take off his shoes standing up. It was only Rabbi Hanina, because his mother gave him special, you know, aloe lotion, whatever he smeared. How old was Moshe Rabbeinu at this point? 80 years old. Moshe HaYishmael Mishanim Ba'amdeg Lefnei Paroi. He was 80. So if Moshe needed to take off his shoe, what was he going to have to do? Sit down. But there's a problem. Because what is by the snah? The Shechina. In the place of the Shechina, you're not to sit. Ein yeshiva ba'azara. You're not to sit in the Beis HaMikdash. By the way, you're not allowed to sit within four amos of someone davening Shmona Esrei. For the same reason, the Taz writes in Siman Kuf Beis, in Shulchan Aruch, you can look it up. So, I put it on the sheet, just very briefly, number 5. Sifkat and Gimel. The reason the Taz gives why you're not allowed to sit within four amos of someone down Yishmon Esrei is because the territory becomes like the Beis HaMikdash. It becomes holy territory. So you can't sit. There's only one person who's allowed to sit. A king who descends from David HaMelech. Ein yeshiva ba'azara el ha-malchus beis David bovad. So Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem tells him, take off your shoe. Moshe Rabbeinu says, fine. Moshe Rabbeinu starts sitting down. Sitting down? Is he a king? Obviously, he wants to be the king. Because only a king has license to sit in the place of the Azara. So where does Hashem sit? Al tikrav halom. Don't sit here. Shal nalech me'aragecha. Move away and take off your shoes. I'm not giving you malchus. So besides the word... That was Hashem's decision not to give Moshe malchus. But besides the word halom, the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to take off his shoes... obviously he couldn't do it standing. He had to do it sitting because he was 80 years old. That means that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to sit, but you can't sit in a holy place. Must be Moshe Rabbeinu was requesting malchus. And that's how another remez to the fact that Hashem, that Moshe Rabbeinu was requesting malchus, and Hashem tells him, Al Tikrav Halom, do not approach here. Okay, so some things to think about on Sefer Shemos in general and Parsha Shemos.
Very nice.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.